time on the show, making mothers cover their children's ears, the Not My Thing Challenge, and why we love a good fight, even if we don't always love the consequences. All this and more on Comics Are Great. Comics Great, the visual storytelling show, special non-video in-between recording. I'm supposed to be on hiatus, but I just can't stay away from the mic because I have a golden opportunity here in the sense that Ryan Estrada is in town for just a little bit longer, in Ann Arbor, and couldn't pass up the chance to talk to you.
Yeah, Ryan Estrada just happened to be near Jersey's house because he decided to use his laptop as a 17-inch cell phone while walking down the streets of Ann Arbor, and ended up having to stick around while they're looking for a replacement screen. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah. So tell the story of what happened, because you know, this is part of what makes you such a great person to talk to, is you always have an interesting story to tell because interesting things happen to you. What some people would say are terrible things, but you always call them interesting. So
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I you know, I'm just in town for a short time, so I don't have a cell phone. I have to stay mobile. So I came to Ann Arbor to meet some friends, and since I didn't have a phone, and when I didn't see them there, I had to find out what's going on. I just walked down the street looking for free Wi-Fi so I can Skype them, and just whip out my big old laptop, hold it to my ear, and then when I realize I have to get back before the meter runs out, trip and launch my laptop to skids across a parking lot.
Oh, God. And the best part of the story, well, there's no good part of the story, but you were on the episode we did a long time ago called episode 13, Swears, where you said something about how you don't swear very much. Yeah. Because it's a volume thing for you.
Yeah, I want to make sure that when I need to swear and make a point, I have that available to me. If someone swears all the time and they use profanity, you don't really, it doesn't, you know, just seems like any other sentence they do, but I want to make sure that when I swear, people know that something happened. So when I launched my laptop across my new MacBook Pro across a parking lot, I actually got to see the thing that I thought you only see in cartoons, where I yelled something and then a mother crossing the street slowly with deadpan looks at me deadpan and then slowly covers her children's ears.
I think you were entitled to a loud profanity when a 17-inch MacBook Pro flies out of your hands and hits the concrete. But you know what? I mean, not to do the commercial for Apple, but I was surprised at how little damage was done to the exterior of the thing, considering what happened. Too bad about the screen, though.
Yeah, but it just kind of has a... It looks like there's a spider web in it. So if I just imagine that I'm Spider-Man doing Photoshop in my web, it'll be all right.
But still, yeah, so you got to get that fixed. Yeah. And crossing my fingers that it happens in time before you leave, before you leave the country. But if anybody doesn't know, if anybody's listening to the show for the first time, if you haven't heard of Ryan Estrada, ryanestrada.com. And I want to make some noise because we are in the midst of the holiday season. And a lot of people got Kindle Fires and iPads and all sorts of different tablet devices, maybe the Asus Transformer Prime or whatever. And it just so happens that you got a ton of content that is totally perfect for a tablet device that people can get for free. Hundreds and hundreds of pages, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you go to my website, there's a button at the bottom that says download everything. And you click on that, and it literally just, a zip file goes into your computer that has all kinds of graphic novels. There's stuff for kids, there's stuff about superheroes, there's stuff about my adventures, and it's all just... go on there for free as PDFs. You can just flick through it on your iPad or whatever. So if you want to give it a test run and see what it looks like with comics, load it up.
And plus films.
Yeah, plus my adventure videos.
Your adventure videos, because as we talked about before on the show, you travel the world and lots of interesting things happen to you when you travel around the world because you make no plans. You sort of just dive into countries.
Yeah, you can watch me being almost eaten by lions and all that stuff.
Is the video up yet? I know you got a couple new videos up of your adventures in Central America. Those are not in the package yet, right?
Yeah. Once I complete the season, I'll edit them into like this one's actually gonna be like feature film length. Once it's all done, I'm in the middle of that season right now. It's kind of took a break for the holidays, and I guess I'll be taking a break this week because I have a exploded laptop, but. Within the next couple weeks, there will be a new episode. I think the next episode will either be the Witch Market or the time that I accidentally ended up walking through a cocoa war.
I was going to ask if that one was coming up, because, yeah, that's one of the more interesting stories that you have from that trip, where you had to walk through the jungle at night because the cab driver said, I'm not taking you any farther than this, but would not tell you why.
Yeah. And it turns out there was a cocoa war and a state of emergency. And whole long story. I won't get into it now, but...
I want to jump on that just real quick, because I think this is... I just had a discussion with a friend of mine who said, man, I'm in a rut in my life, and he's in this routine where he's comfortable, and he's doing all the things that make him happy, but he's feeling this kind of like this malaise and boredom about, you know, going through the same thing over and over again. And he asked me, like, well, you know, what would you do? What's one thing you would change if you were me? And I said to him, like, well, just... maybe you should try doing a couple things that frighten you a little bit, because that just spices it up. And so I told him like 10 stories from your life, and like I told him about how you were almost eaten by lions, how you walked through the jungle through the middle of a cocoa war, how you stayed with a family where your guide let you swim with piranhas, and they thought that blowing tobacco smoke into a room exercises demons and bad spirits and everything. And he's like, well, God, I'm not going to do that. I'm like, well, but you know, the thing is that whenever something weird like that happens to you at the time, it's always kind of like, oh my gosh, how am I going to get out of this? Or, oh, I can't believe this is happening to me. But you have a good story afterwards. Like when you slept on a park bench during a typhoon, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to do that. But if you make it through, then you've got, like, you have colorful experiences to look back. You're making memories, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not even, you don't even need to do stuff like that. Like I gave myself a challenge at one point when I was living in the jungle of Costa Rica, which to anyone else would be the unique thing to doing. But that's what I'm already doing. That's already my life. So, you know, it was hard to get out of town and go places because it's very remote. But I gave myself the not my thing challenge, where as much as possible I had to do – whenever I thought to myself, oh, that's not my thing, I'm like, well, I have to do it now.
Yeah.
Like just things like I'm going to listen to all the Lady Gaga albums.
Yeah.
Or I'm gonna I've never downloaded an ebook. I'm gonna download an ebook and read it. I've never read a novel by this author. I'm gonna read a novel by this author. I'm gonna go take a dance class just because it's the only thing. Or I took a meditation class. I took a yoga class just because it was, you know, available near my house. And I thought it's not my thing, but then it quickly became my thing. And if it wasn't my thing, I got to experience a new thing.
So what do you get out of that?
You get a wider variety of experiences, and you meet people that you wouldn't have no way of meeting otherwise, and just kind of understand more about the culture and the people. And sometimes something that wasn't your thing will become your thing, and you'll have opportunities to have lots more experiences.
Meeting people, that's an interesting one that I think is something where, you know, we're in a time right now where, you know, in your real life, you can have your circle of friends, but also, you know, this is an internet show, so we have to acknowledge all the social medias and everything. And, like, you have your Twitter friends, you have your Twitter list, you have your Facebook list, and you have your groups that you're comfortable with. But there are very – it's like I think about, like, the old AOL days where you'd get on AOL Instant Messenger and other AOL users would just see that you're online. You could wind up meeting people through chat like that. Right. It's kind of harder now. It's like it's more detailed, more granular, and it's easier to make your inner circle, which is awesome. But in terms of like meeting new people, you know, the not my thing challenge, this is something that I experienced recently this past year, where I intentionally took on a couple things that like normally I'd be like, oh, that's really scary. And I wound up meeting people who, outside of our passion for our particular field, and I'm not saying comics, like I'm like now, you know, friendly and sociable with like computer programmers who are like as passionate about computer programming as I am about comics. And outside of that passion, we have nothing to talk about, but we can get together and talk about what we're really excited about. And so like this is, I would not have met these guys had I not gone on to these social events that were actually kind of nerve wracking, right?
Yeah. One interesting thing about traveling so much is when, like, if I move to a country that doesn't speak English, there'll be a foreigner community of English speakers, and suddenly that's, you know, everyone will want to get together because they want to just have chance to, you know, the only chance to have a full conversation. So you end up, you know, instead of being like, well, I better go find some artist to hang out with, you find a group of people and you're the artist of the group.
Yeah.
You know, and you, all these people that I wouldn't talk to, and then when I come here, you know, I'm like, I gotta find, you know, I'll drive to Ann Arbor to hang out with artists.
Yeah.
When I, you know, there's so many people around that I just don't even think to talk to because I'm like, oh, I nothing to talk to about. It just, it's a weird mental block that people have and that even I get when I come back to the U.S.
So taking yourself out of that comfort zone can make you more open to that serendipity. Yeah. Whereas when you have more choices and you can be more granular, you lose that sense of serendipity sometimes. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like anybody listening who's like, what's this got to do with comics? Well, we're also talking about leading a creative life, too, right? You know? And so, I don't know. I think that that's a really nice outlook. And that
you look at a lot of comics. I'm not going to name names, but there's certain comics where every character is exactly like the creator and likes the same things as the creator. Yeah. And there's not really any conflict. And if there is conflict, it's the main character likes the things that I like and the villain doesn't like the things that I like.
Right.
But if you're talking to people from all walks of life and hearing ideas, then you can actually build interesting characters that are nothing like you and have the world of your creations feels whole.
I did a workshop for leanintoart.com where it was mostly about building a cast of characters, and a creative tool that I introduced, and I borrowed this from a teaching friend of mine, was I had the students come up with a list of just writing down the first names of your best friend in second grade, your first crush, your first real love, the person who is your diametric opposite in terms of personality, the person you would never allow yourself to be, the person you most like to be, just creating a list and evoking the feelings that you get when you think about those people as fuel to build characters. And then I said, okay, well, I'm the teacher, so I got to model this exercise and I'm going to demo it now. So main character of the story, which one of this list do you guys want me to use? And they said, your diametric opposite, the person you won't allow yourself to be. And I was like, oh, okay, there's a challenge. Mm-hmm. How do you write that person in a compassionate way? I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't sit down and try to understand what makes my polar opposite tick, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't get to find that out until you meet lots of people and actually, you know, try to be an understanding, compassionate human being when you're talking with people, right?
Another thing you do, you realize that if you try to make a character that's the opposite of you, and the things that you dislike, you start to realize how much the characters like you, and you didn't realize. Like Aki, the book I did, Aki Alliance.
Yeah.
I tried to make Aki just a really awful person. And I start looking at the way she looks at the world and realizing a lot of things that I didn't realize about myself that I, you know, Aki is an exaggeration, but ways that my mind work in the same ways that her mind works, and kind of understand not only other people, when I meet other people that act the way she does, I'm not, you know, it's harder to be angry at them because you can understand where they're coming from, but also realizing that my brain kind of works that way too. So
yeah. Wow. So, and which again makes you a better writer because then you can inhabit the characters more honestly, right? Yeah. Than what you could before.
It's like I always mention that series of Calvin and Hobbes strips where Calvin cloned himself and just really hated his clone.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, realizing all the things that he didn't realize he was. It's absolutely him, but he just, wow, this guy's a jerk.
So we've established that you're an adventurous soul. You are a compassionate and gentle soul. And I want to get into the next thing that was our big topic. And I think this is going to be good food for thought for a cartoonist who wants to write better, but also engaging with communities online. Man, we've talked about this a lot, and we've hinted at little pieces of this in past shows that we've done together. But this whole idea of why we fight online, why there's internet drama and flame wars, and, you know, maybe this is a reflection of how little I engage in different comics communities, that it feels like it's happening less and less, at least from my standpoint nowadays. It seemed like it was happening a lot in, say, like 2003, 2004, yeah. 2005. A lot of flame wars on people's forums and in people's comment threads on websites and places like Comicspedia sometimes, like on news sites and things like that. But it still happens. It still happens every once in a while. Some people say something that just ticks somebody off or ticks a group of people off, and it turns into a big battle. And we were walking through downtown Ann Arbor a couple weeks ago, and you said something that just made my eyelids peel all the way back. I was like, oh my God, that is such a profound way of looking at it. And you said to me, you've never heard me go on this soapbox before? The whole, like, why we fight? You know, why we're so defensive about where we stand? I don't know. You want to start it off? Want to kick it off?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was during that period you were talking about, like around 2001, 2003, where it was really happening a lot. And I just like you mentioned the other day when we were talking about doing the show, I was thinking, well, there's a lot less of it nowadays.
Yeah.
And then right after that, there's like three big flare-ups that happened. And I'm thinking about a few. It's still happening. I think the two of us are just not engaging or listening anymore.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was really like plugged in and trying to build myself up in the community. So I was hearing about all these things. And it was starting to get really bad. And then at the same time, that's when I went to volunteer in Thailand. After the tsunami in 2002, I think it was, I went to Thailand. I was living on an island called Koh Phi Phi, volunteering and helping rebuild. And I started seeing the exact same thing happening that happened in webcomics. And like, there was so much drama on this island that I actually saw a man get voted off an island in real life. Of the volunteers just were so eager to fight with other volunteers, because what happened is people are giving up so much to be there. They've literally left their lives. They've left their families. They've spent their own money to fly out, quit their jobs, to stay in little shacks on this beach for some for weeks, some for months, some for years, and just help people. And they've put so much of their time and energy into it that they have to kind of rationalize it in their head why they're doing this. And when someone else comes along that goes against that rationalization, they're doing it wrong. Like, you get people that are coming there and helping to rebuild as quickly as possible because they want everything to be ready for tourists to come back in so that these people that live there can start earning money again. But then when the tourists come in, they're like, what are these jerks doing? How dare they come and just sit on beaches and drink margaritas while, you know, people are suffering and we're all working.
Yeah.
And then you get people that come there and volunteer during the week and go to the beach on the weekend, and people are like, how dare they take time off? And then you get people that have, you get, even with the people that are volunteering 24 hours a day, you get like some people that think, you know, we have to get the tourist areas fixed up first so that we get tourists coming in. These people have jobs before we can start anything else. And the other people that think, how dare you start fixing up all these people, all these places, all the tourists use, and these people need their houses fixed. And just people were at each other's throats all the time.
So you're saying that people are intrinsically jerks?
No, I'm saying people just need to rationalize why they're putting so much effort into something that they are not getting anything out of them. Well, not they're getting something out of it, but they're putting in so much effort and they need to rationalize what they're getting out of it and why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And no one was trying to be a jerk. Everyone was trying to do what they thought was right.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized this is exactly what's happening in webcomics, because so many web cartoonists are making a comic, putting it out for free. They're not finding a way yet to earn a living from it. And they're spending time away from their families. They're spending time away from paying work. They're spending time away from their jobs. They're working a full-time job, coming home exhausted and drawing a comic. And they have to rationalize in their head, why am I doing this? For some people, it's because they're really passionate about the art. And then they get mad when they see someone else just doing like stick figure comics or reusing backgrounds or something like that. Or
lens flare.
And then there's other people who are all about the story, and they get upset when people are just focusing on slick art and don't have a good story. And there's people that say this thing is not a real comic because it's you know, any number of reasons. And there's like you get the people that are doing web comics because they're really into like the Creative Commons thing. And there's even people in that group that consider the people that do, like me, who do Creative Commons non-commercial licenses, they're not real artists because they're not allowing commercial, you know, even though I'm using the same license but with one tweak.
Right.
Because
you're not acknowledging that bits just want to be free.
Yeah.
And you should just give it away and let people do whatever they want with it, right? And I'm not denigrating that position. It's a position, right? And some people get very staunchly, behind that idea, right?
Yeah. But the truth is, I mean, everyone is doing what's right for their work, and it wouldn't necessarily work for another project. I use these licenses for these particular projects that I've done, with another project that I want to use in a different way, I might use, I might have full copyright on it. I might have free use. I might put it in public domain. I think what happens is a lot is people get too focused on this is the way things need to be done and this is why we do things, but everyone does things for different reasons. But
part of that too, don't you think, comes out of the fact that saying that this is the way, like I did a post on Christmas Day because I got this big art edition of the Mighty Thor Walt Simonson artwork, like untouched original artwork pages at the full size, great gorgeous art book. Well, I'm flipping through that. Anne's sitting on the couch across from me, and she's got her iPad, and she's got the Viz Manga app, and she's downloading these collections of books like Bakuman and stuff for like $4 a piece, you know? And she's just flipping through and just consuming these books. And I thought, wow, here's a picture of publishing in the 21st century. Art book, print. Consumable comics, digital. And we're both happy. And neither of us was saying, like, this is the way. But that's what happens when somebody does a blog post, the future of comics is going to be all digital apps. Or, no, the future of comics is going to swing back and it's going to be print because print can do things that digital comics can't. Wow, everybody has to defend a position like this because that's what gets clicks, right? I mean, that's sexy to talk about, this is my position, I'm gonna preach from the box, right? Mm-hmm. So is it? I'm just trying to layer this on too. It's not just about defending your point of view, but it also is, it's a way to get attention, to get traction.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to get an audience around mm-hmm. you, right? So that's something that I try to bear in mind. I see people using inflammatory language online. It's like sometimes it's just link bait.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you, a lot of times, like if you're writing something about that, you come up with like a headline that catches views, and that kind of influences the way you're going to write the piece.
Because if you say like, publishing in the 21st century, it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
That's not going to get clicked very much, you know?
Yeah. I think the future of comics, the future of anything, is that we're opening up the ways that people can present their work so that people don't have to do things a certain way. It's totally available that someone could create an entirely new form of media right now and be selling work that couldn't exist in any other media in that way, and they could be up and running tomorrow and it could be the new popular thing.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that. What was her name again? Jessica Yu or Rebecca Yu?
I'm not sure the name.
I could look it up while we talk about it. But well, like, who heard of her until like 3 days ago?
Yeah. Jersey and I were both just posting online about Amazon posted their list of the top-selling...
Rachel Yu.
Rachel Yu. Yeah, they posted the list of the top-selling comics on the Kindle over the holidays, and beating out all of the DC comics and all of everything is this...
In spite of the fact that DC had an exclusive arrangement with Amazon for digital distribution.
Yeah, the number one was self-published by a 14-year-old girl who wrote and illustrated the book herself, uploaded it to Amazon herself, and just people read it, they liked it, got word of mouth, and I haven't even seen any place, like something happens like that, you assume like someone championed it and like, we're going to make this girl's day. No, people just liked the book.
It's got a great cover. Yeah. I mean, what a great cover for that book. I can see why people just bought it, you know? So,
and it now she's the number one seller on the Kindle.
And you wrote a great thought on this. You said, like, I'm so proud to be involved in a medium where this can happen.
Yeah.
Right? Because that was unthinkable 20 years ago.
Yeah. Like, I was published when I was 15. I did a comic for the local newspaper. And this is, like, this really rare opportunity that I somehow talked them into it. Mm-hmm. But, like, she didn't need permission. She just did it. And, like, how much money do you think DC and Amazon spent on that whole deal?
Yeah.
To get the exclusive rights and set up a thing and advertise it, and like, I'm sure there are advertising agencies involved, and this girl's like, I want to make a book.
yeah, I mean, and so, okay, so you talk about how we're in this time, you're defining our time as being this time of everything being opened up, which is a great thought. It's a wonderful, lovely thought. But then, how come we still get so wrapped up in putting it in boxes and fighting against amongst ourselves about it? And I'm not saying that, like, oh, let's all get along. Let's debate.
Yeah.
But some people let it get ugly. Yeah. And
well, yeah, a lot of people... I just completely forgot the thought I was going to say.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to step on you. It'll come back.
No. A lot of people are afraid that if one thing becomes popular, no one's going to buy the thing that they make anymore. Or it's going to change. Like... If you ever read animation blogs, every time like a motion capture film comes out, like everyone starts railing that it's destroyed 2D animation, and you know, like you can make a 2D film, you're allowed to do that. Like it's not everyone's job to make sure that the kind of film that you like is the dominant one.
Right.
It's just a completely separate type of filmmaking. But like I had mentioned that tomorrow someone could make a completely new form of media and it could be the new popular thing. It could also be a thing that works perfectly for that one thing that they made. And it doesn't have to be that's the new thing. It's just that's how you read that story. But everyone's afraid that if people start reading ebooks, print's going to die. Or if they start only watching 3D movies, then the little guy can't make his movie anymore because he can't afford the 3D cameras. But the type of technology we have now that I can, you know, I was just talking to Jersey earlier today about how walking through his studio, talking about how my studio is a pocket in my backpack.
Yeah.
Like I have a film studio, I have a photography studio, I have all of this stuff in a pocket in my bag that I can use on an airplane. Like I saw this picture on Twitter of the director of Toy Story 3 editing the film on his Apple with the tray table in an airplane.
Yeah.
Like you can make anything you want now. You don't need anyone's permission. You don't need to convince any studio exec that it's the next big thing. You can just be like, if you can find the resources, and the resources are getting easier and easier to come by because more and more of it is just the software you have on your computer, you can make anything you want and you can find an audience for it without it having to be the way that culture works now.
I want to diverge just for a second, and I hope I'm not stepping on any other ideas that you might have that might be worth sharing. But one of the things that you said to me once that I thought was really, really smart is, and this was going back to the Zuda comics thing. Yeah. Now, to refresh people's memories who don't remember, Zuda was a sort of an imprint of DC Comics, their digital imprint, where they ran an American Idol-style contest where everybody did a pitch of a webcomic, and then whatever ones got voted up got a publishing contract with DC.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Man, there were some fights around that one,
yeah.
Some big fights around that one. And some people on one side said, you don't need DC to make a great webcomic for yourself. You just put the stuff on the web, and that's the pure way to be a web cartoonist. Having to collude with a publisher somehow muddies the whole picture because they're going to own part of your ideas. And then people say, the counter argument was, is, well, I got other ideas. And then going back to the other side, they say, yeah, but you're going to love this idea once you do it a lot. And it's going to be painful when DC tries to take it away. You said, what, like I had like six great ideas this morning. You know, I got a million ideas. And
yeah, I have a hard drive full of scripts that I'll never get to. And if I can sell one of them to DC, you know, a lot of things people pitched to DC were like Alien versus Ninja, or I did a werewolf comic. Like these aren't things that no one has ever thought of. It's just I could make an interesting comic out of this. If they pay me $10,000 to make that comic, I can then live off that $10,000 for a year and make 30 other comics that are completely my own.
That's what Coppola did, isn't it? I read about it. But where I'm driving with this whole idea is it gets me wondering if one of the reasons, like, okay, 3D technology is hot and everybody's making 3D movies, and then the guy who is an indie filmmaker says, great, now I'll never get to make a great film because I don't have 3D cameras. Is that, do you think that somehow is a defense mechanism to protect yourself from having to come up with a good idea? Because what you're describing is really what's limiting you is the idea good? Is the story good? The technology's there that anybody can just do it now. And like a 14-year-old girl can make a book and just sell it on the internet. So really the only limitation is, are you creative enough? And if I say, well, I don't have the right equipment, then I don't have to be creative because I've got that excuse to bail me out of having to get involved, right? I don't know. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's just a matter of there's a lot of things. People are scared of engaging in these big creative pursuits. They don't know if they're going to make money off it. They don't know if they're going to find an audience. They don't know if the story, they're even going to like it when they're done, if it's going to, all the things are going to come together.
Yeah.
And they just think, if I only had that one thing that guy has, or what if while I'm working on it, this guy comes along and changes it so people don't like this kind of thing anymore. They like this kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's just scary, and you know, you kind of look for boogeymen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is perfectly analogous to your adventures that you go on around the world. It's like when you were dropped off in that jungle by that cab driver. You know, I mean, was your response, oh, God, it's over, or is it interesting? I wonder what's going to happen next, right? Yeah. I mean, and this is you being dropped off in the jungle in the middle of a coca war. A creative pursuit is, it can be very scary, but it's a creative pursuit. And yeah, it requires a lot of effort, and it's taxing, and it's going to jeopardize relationships in your life, and everything, and all sorts of different things come with it, come with the baggage. But I think that that's something to remind ourselves of, is like, are you going to say, boy, what's going to happen to me now? Or are you going to say, boy, isn't this interesting? I wonder what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, to bring this all back around to the charity thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, bring it full circle. There's a, something that happened to me about a month ago. I was involved in a charity, and it made me realize that I do the same thing, in that I was involved in this thing where people buy gifts for children in foster care. They get a list, and they buy the gifts, and they fly them all over the state to deliver for Christmas. And I've done it a couple times whenever I'm in the country. And before, I was always in the room sorting the presents into the areas that they go to. And this time, I was out on the tarmac loading the stuff in the planes. And then I started to realize how weird this setup was, because what we do is we get all the presents for a certain town, load them into a truck, drive the truck out, and then like 50 or 60 volunteer planes would come land. We'd take out like 3 presents at a time, put them in a plane, because these tiny little planes, they fit like the trunk of a car. You know, all these things that have been nicely wrapped and put in bags are now ripped out and shoved in like Tetris. And then this plane takes off. Like after 50 planes, then there's like 10 presents left in the car and no more planes. Like, okay, I guess we'll just take the truck and drive it there. And I'm like, why didn't we take the truck to begin with? Like these planes are like spending $10,000 in gas to fly this thing to Lansing,
yeah,
from West Bloomfield, which is like, you know, some of these places like an hour drive away. And I'm starting to be like, this is ridiculous. And I asked people why they do that, and they, oh, well, it started by pilots. And I realized these pilots just need an excuse to engage in their really expensive hobby. Like, right, they can't just be like, I'm gonna go spend $10,000 flying, like I'm doing it for charity. Right. And I started to get mad about that. And then I realized, who cares why they're doing it? In the end, these kids are still getting, these kids have probably never gotten a gift in their life. And, you know, they have to share clothes with 30 other kids in the foster home. Yeah. They're still getting presents. So, and I realized, what am I doing? I'm just here because I think it's really fun to be running on the tarmac and playing Tetris in these planes.
Right.
Like, you know, the other people could just as easily be like, you know, I spent $300 on these presents for these kids, and you're just here putting them in planes, you know, like,
right,
who cares who does what for what reasons? You know, there have been a lot of webcomic fights like that too. Like there was one where this webcomic had gotten in a fight with someone who had offered money to charity and then didn't do it. And so they put the money, they gave the money to charity in his name. And people were saying, you know, that how dare they? That's not the way to give charity in a fight. And I'm like, and I said to someone, it may not be the classiest way to give to charity, but it's the classiest way to end a fight.
Yeah.
You know, the kids who this money helps aren't going to say, I don't want this blood money from your webcomic feud. Just as long as people are doing good things and good things happen in the end, who cares what the reasons are? Who cares how it gets done?
Somebody's going to bring this up, so I'll go ahead and do it. And I'm saying, like, the listeners are going to bring this up. Merlin Mann famously has said again and again, is like, don't fight in public, because all people are going to remember on the internet is that whether or not you were a jerk in the fight. Yeah. They're not going to remember who won or what point was made. All they're going to remember was how people behaved. And again, there are countless examples of people getting fired up and defending their positions, and sometimes it gets ugly. But I want to go to this idea of, do you think that there's any use cases for having a fight online?
Hmm.
I can't think of any, but yeah. I just thought that'd be a tricky curveball to throw into the discussion. Is like, because there's got to be. I mean, because like, it gets your base riled up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of political things that you see people doing a big move toward and making images and websites and try and get like laws passed and build awareness of something.
Okay.
If someone's actually doing something that's doing harm to someone else, I don't see that any reason not to bring awareness about it, but you know, just there's classy ways to do things and
mm-hmm.
not make yourself look like a jerk, but just say this is what's happening, something needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, not a lot of webcomics drama is about things like that.
When it's about whether or not somebody's stick figure comic should be called a comic, you know, or if it's you know, it's like, oh, this guy made a joke about my. Like, I don't know if this ever happened to you. It never happened to me, but like somebody does. Well, actually, it did happen to me. Now that I think about it, somebody does like a parody of something you did, like specifically to make fun of you or something like that. Like, I don't know. I mean, do you? My policy is that just ignore it for the most part. Don't get involved if somebody's trying to take a poke at me, just because. And if they do it repeatedly, and if it's like exceedingly aggressive, then maybe I'll take it offline. I'll like send them an email saying, "Hey, dude, what's going on here? Why you know you clearly have a problem? Maybe we should talk it out."
Yeah.
But I don't know. Do you have any anecdotes or experiences where somebody was specifically attacking somebody else for out of the blue, and then the other person took it poorly?
Yeah, I mean, the one story I was thinking of that happened to me when I did my 168-hour comic.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to break the record of like, you know, the 24-hour comic. I was doing basically 24-hour comic for an entire week. That I've talked about in every show I've ever been on, so I'm going to explain the whole process again. But basically, I was trying to break a record, and then I was like 3 hours away from finishing, and all of a sudden, this other cartoonist sends me, I made a 168-hour comic myself this week, just in my free time, just to prove that I could do it before you.
Yeah.
And sends it to me, and then I made this comic making fun. Like it was a pretty funny. It was actually funny.
Yeah.
The comic he made about me not caring about quality and quantity over quality. And at that moment, because I hadn't slept in a week, I'm like, oh, you jerk. And I was so mad at him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know what to do now. And I just like went to sleep for the first time in a week, and I woke up and I read the comic he made again. I'm like, that's pretty funny. And then I'm like, if I had like four more pages to my comic, will you like let me have my record since I was just up for a week? And he's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, all right, that's awesome. That's awesome that 268-hour comics were made this week.
See, okay, so like a little bit of like giving yourself a chance to breathe might be a good thing to do every once in a while instead of just reacting.
Yeah, and what it meant was that what I was doing struck enough of a nerve with someone that they made a 168-page book. That's pretty exciting.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Like that. Like, I could have been really offended by that if I, you know, I was for a moment.
Right.
But, like, I realized, you know, that's someone, even if he, you know, I don't know if he was actually trying to make me mad or if he was, I have no idea, but it doesn't matter. It struck a note, and he did actually make a funny point about what I was doing.
Right.
And, more art came out of the situation, so. So good for everybody.
But that's a presence of mind that, unfortunately, going back to one of your earlier points, when you are married to your position and when you have invested so much of yourself and your energy, as you said, like you just spend a week working on this comic, not sleeping, certain chemical things are going to be happening in that situation that are going to affect the way you think. But also, you're busting your back to get this thing done. And then somebody says, oh, you don't even care about quality. All you're trying to do is pump out a bunch of crap. Of course, it's perfectly human that you're going to go, hey, you can't say that about me, right?
Yeah.
But it's cool that like you're reminding us that maybe you should step back, look at the big picture. And a lot of common nuggets of wisdom get thrown around, like, well, if you know, was it Oscar Wilde who said something about like the worst thing is not being talked about at all?
Yeah.
And like, as long as people are talking about you, whether they're saying good things or bad things, no such thing as bad press, or you have to be ticking somebody off in order to be doing something that means anything. But I like how you defined it as you're getting people to act. You're making a call to action through your actions. And that's the important thing, not whether or not they like you necessarily. Yeah. But then also, you brought up the fact that you had no context. You don't know what this guy's motivations were. I mean, he might have been somebody who was specifically attacking you, wanted you to feel bad. He might have been somebody who was just like, it's hard to tell in the context of text. Like, he might have just been like elbowing you in the ribs.
Yeah.
Or he might have just been a kook, you know? Yeah. Any of those things colors the way you are supposed to respond to that. Yeah.
Yeah. And now, you know, now I'm a big fan of his comics now. I never heard him before. He's a really good artist. Yeah.
And had you just reacted at the moment before you went to bed,
yeah,
it could have been a lot different, right?
Yeah, and there's a lot of situations, too, where I, like, will joke with someone and say things in a way that I'd say to a friend that's sitting in the room, mm-hmm. and then I realize, oh, I don't know this guy. Like, yeah. I've talked to him online, but he doesn't know my sense of humor, does he? He probably thinks I just really... You know, I've sent so many emails like, oh, dude, well, that thing I said, what? How did you think I meant that? Like, because I didn't... And it's always like, it's fine, Ryan. But like, I can see situations where I could have started a webcomic war,
yeah,
just by like, you know, because I can't do a sarcastic voice in a,
right,
a Twitter post. Or there's so many times where a Twitter post sounds insulting because you had to delete 20 characters and it was the word that made it sound not insulting.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, and that's another piece of common wisdom that gets thrown around is, like, always assume that text comes across, like, a certain percentage colder than you intended it and whatnot. I mean, because, like, none of us are, well, few of us, let's say this, have degrees in writing, you know? So, we're facing that limitation in engaging with people.
Yeah, lately I've just been able to, I imagine, whenever I'm typing something, I always imagine that I'm saying it to one of my Korean friends, because in Korea there's no sarcasm.
Really?
So I have to be very careful what I say. I found out, like, after having friends for like 5 years, that they just thought that I was just a full of myself jerk, because I'd always be like, I'd always talk about like, yeah, I'm so ripped and buff, you know, I don't go to the gym, I don't want to be any more physically intimidating than I already am. And one day someone, they sit me down like, Ryan, you know that you're fat, right? And I'm like, yeah.
So, wow, what does that mean culturally? Like, if there's no sarcasm, does that mean, like, it's just like a culture of earnestness for the most part?
Yeah, you just say what you think. And they can't comprehend that you're saying something. Why would you say something if you think the opposite thing?
So there's no ironic t-shirts then?
Yeah, no.
Wow, I kind of want to go to Korea for a little while to see what that's like. That would be a really interesting experience. But yeah, I don't know what else there is to say about it. I mean, it's like you brought up a recent kerfuffle. That's what the kids call it, I think. Where you mentioned a certain audience that was like, you said they were waiting for something like this. I don't know. I mean, it's something where, like, you even found the humor in the fact that this thing was happening. I mean, this was something where somebody was clearly making a complete idiot out of themselves, and a lot of people were responding to it. I don't know if that's like, if there's a takeaway there of like, because like, when you engage online, you're going to meet weirdos. And okay, I'm going to try to flip it and talk about the opposite response to that. You are enjoying a healthy following on Google+, which we've talked about before. And as a result of that, you're also starting to get some very, very strange comments in your comment stream. And people who are not familiar with who you are, where you're coming from when you're posting these comics on Google+, and someone said something to the effect of, Ryan, post something better, this is childish. And, like, the sentence structure was a little weird, so it didn't seem like maybe English wasn't their first language, or maybe they just weren't thinking clearly when they typed. And you wrote something to the effect of, I don't understand your post, but I'm going to assume that you were not trying to make me feel bad, or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, so you demonstrated the classy way of dealing with that situation. You know, I'm just wondering if, you know, if these things don't, these bits of drama don't have a, I have to acknowledge their usefulness in terms of getting people excited, get your base excited to defend you against something. But then I also think about how what Merlin said is people don't remember who won, they just remember who was a jerk. Doesn't seem like, I don't know, I want to get your opinion on this. Do these fights give you any long-term benefit? Is there any long-term benefit that we can look at? Like, the hesitation I have is I just don't want to do something that's just going to be a momentary sensation. I created a spectacle for people to gather around, and then they're going to forget about me afterwards. I want people to remember me because I put positive things out there or deal with people in a positive way, so that whenever they hear my name, they always think, oh, he's that nice guy. That always makes you feel better after talking to him. But if I create like a big spectacle show, then it's like, oh, there was that flash in the pan Drost. He did that dumb thing 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think what happens to a lot of people and to audiences is that when they can either find or create a bad guy, they feel like Batman.
Oh.
They get to do the detective work. They find the phone number. They find the Twitter handle. They look at the website and find things that he did wrong. And then they can all, like, just be the vigilante and set things right.
Yeah.
And they feel like Batman. The creator that incited this feels, wow, look at this movement that happened just because I made one complaint. And all these, the people that are taking part in it, like, feel like they're part of something. And they're getting the bad guy.
Yeah.
And for all the people in this group that are paying attention and following it along, they all feel like this group is totally in the right. But to anyone who is just coming across it, skimming through a feed, or someone kind of hearing it mentioned years down the road, just thinks these guys are a bunch of jerks.
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that always makes me itchy about it, is the sense that it's ultimately not very timely, or not timeless. I mean, it's timely, but not timeless, you know? At the time, it's a big deal. It's like when you go back to high school and you think about, oh, remember that time of that guy and you got in a fight in the hallway? And, like, at the time, this was epic drama. This was, the whole world is going to explode if I don't do this right.
Yeah.
But then I look back and I'm like, that was just me and, like, another kid pushing each other, just saying, like, mean things, you know? It ultimately doesn't have any kind of memorable thing outside of the bad feelings that I had at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it's... Yeah, I mean, these things don't necessarily always, end up a horrible experience for both involved, but I can't think of any examples where it ever did anything good. And there have been there's another situation I was in where I heard that someone was complaining about me behind my back because I didn't... I was the... when they did the Web Cartoonist Choice Awards, I was the one choosing who was drawing the comics for the presentations.
Okay.
And there was a guy who was angry that I didn't invite him when I didn't invite anyone. Like, I felt like a jerk asking. It was like extra work I'm asking people to do. Like, people that volunteered, I'm like, all right, you can do it.
Yeah.
But this guy was just really mad that I didn't specifically invite him, even though I've never spoken to him, and was talking about me behind my back to a bunch of people. And so me and a friend that he had been complaining to were like, dude, I should just totally go up to MythsCon and be just really nice.
Yeah.
And like, I did that like as a joke, and I'm like, just went up and complimented, because I really did like his work. I'm complimenting his work and just being as nice as possible with my name tag turned around.
Yeah.
And then when I leaned down to look at his book, I made sure that my name tag turned around and came back up. And he's like, oh, you're Ryan Estrada. And I'm like, yeah, I am. But I didn't even mention what happened.
Right.
And then... like, he was really nice back, and now we're, like, really, really good friends. Like, funny. It never... like, he doesn't even know that I ever knew about that. And, like, yeah. So if you just let it blow over, the good things can come of it. And then if you... you know, now if I were to explain my side of what happened, you know, he'd like, oh, that was a thing? Did I really complain about that? But at the time, if I'd been like, look, buddy.
Yeah.
You know... we would have both gotten defensive, and it would have created a thing for absolutely no use of anybody.
I don't know about you, but for me, whenever I hear like a look buddy, parenthetically in that statement is always like very quietly, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
Do you know who you're dealing with here? And that's just never a way to come to any kind of even an agreement to disagree on something. That's always a contest to see who's going to win the thing. Mm-hmm. And again, we're talking about really low stakes here, aren't we? You know,
yeah.
We're talking about like who in the webcomics community thinks is the coolest.
Yeah.
You know, but again, it goes back to that sense of scarcity too, doesn't it? It's like what really is the consequence of somebody thinking that you're a jerk, even if you didn't mean to be? Because I mean, let's face it, people are going to misinterpret things that are said. I know it's happened to me. Like even things that I've said on podcast and audio. Oh well, you know, you said this, which means you're anti that. Not really, but yeah. Okay. What's really the consequence of that? You know, nothing. outside of somebody thinking you're a jerk, which is bound to happen, whether you like it or not. I don't know. I just I've yet to come up with a reason for why I should get fired up and angry in public at somebody.
And I think a good way to deal with something like that, like you mentioned, you say you're for one thing, people assume you're against it. If you see people getting offended, you realize that I must not have explained my how I stand very carefully. Just take a day or two to kind of collect your thoughts and then do another post talking about this other thing that they think you're against.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, you just kind of got to take away, what am I putting out in the world that makes people think this thing about me? It doesn't mean you have to follow your life to please everyone.
Sure.
But if you, it can make you realize that, oh, I didn't explain this one thing well.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to make it sound like I'm using examples of when I handle things well, but I've also, like you remember in the secret circle, I was talking about that guy that was sending me emails calling me a fraud because I didn't finish my 168-hour, my 1 month animated feature.
Yeah, yeah.
And I totally went off on him. I'm like, how dare you?
How dare you,
I'm
sir?
Like, I'm working on a personal project with my own money, took a month off, and I just told him off in this long email I sent it, and I'm like, oh, shit. I went on to Google+, posted the response I wanted to send, and asked everybody, should I send this? And everybody's like, no, and then I sent it. And as soon as I send it, I'm like, I shouldn't have sent that. I just totally lost a reader. Because this is a guy who cares enough about my work that he really wants to see it so bad. He's emailing me all these times. And I'm just being a total jerk to him and just lost a reader for life.
Yeah, that's another point. You know, I mean, if we're all trying to climb some kind of ladder to gather some kind of an audience, then it seems like every, you know, discretion is or transgression is an opportunity to customer service stuff, for crying out loud.
Yeah,
right?
Well, when I used to teach customer service in India, I had this thing I would always talk to them about how a complaint is the best gift a customer can give you, because if a customer doesn't like your service, 99 out of 100 people will just never come back. That one person that wants to stay with you is telling you, if you want me and 99 other people to come to keep using your service, this is the one simple thing you have to do.
Right.
And they want your service. They're taking the time to tell, even if they're jerks about it, and even if they're yelling and using profanity about it, you can take away, oh, this is how I've presented myself. And if you do something about it, you can win back those 100 people. If you don't, then you lose that one person and the 99 other people that didn't bother to tell you what was wrong.
But you're talking about having like a sense of a presence of mind to not take that personally, because I've done my share of dealing with the public, both in my youth and working customer service, but then also as a teaching artist and as an event organizer. At one of the KRC events, I was taken to task by this woman because the newspaper printed the wrong dates of our event, and somehow it was my fault. Now, it's never fun to get screamed at by somebody. And especially when you're in front of a bunch of people, when you're getting a dressing down from somebody in front of a bunch of people, that is not fun to do or to experience. But, how do you get yourself to that point where you can not get upset about it? You know, how do you, I don't know if there's an easy answer to that outside of like maturity, experience or what, but you know, it's like I knew at that moment that this is not the time for me to yell back at this lady and say, this isn't my fault that the newspaper printed it wrong. You know, we gave them the right information. Instead, I had to sit there and go, oh my gosh, I am so sorry you came here on the wrong weekend. I am so sorry. You know what we're going to do? We're going to give your daughter extra special time in order to make sure that she gets, her, you know, the value that you were looking for when you came here last week and had to make a second trip, you know, because she was just frustrated. I knew that. You know, I understood that she was just frustrated and she needed to let it out. And I just happened to be the lucky recipient at that particular moment. But that was also my opportunity to say, like, okay, well, I can also make this woman into the biggest fan of this thing of all time because I'm going to make it absolutely right for her. But that's simple. You know, it's like we talked about earlier. It's like when you invest so much of your guts and life into something, it's hard to not take it personally, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, the customers that take time to complain are the ones that are passionate, and they're going to be passionately for you or passionately against you.
Yeah,
and that's—I don't know if I've talked about this on the show before about the thing with Lulu when I published the 168-hour comic. Once I finished it, I published as Lulu on Lulu.com, which is a print-on-demand company, and then I only sold like four copies. But there was like a problem with the file, and after the orders were placed, they said we can't print this file and canceled the orders. And I wrote this blog post like when I got the email complaining about how Lulu had messed it up and canceled my orders. And then all of a sudden, this kind of went viral, and everyone's complaining about how Lulu destroyed Ryan's print run. Like, I didn't mention the thing. I sold 4 copies. But all of a sudden, the whole webcomics world is backing me up how much Lulu sucks and how they destroyed it and blah, blah, blah. And then Lulu comes back and says, first of all, they figured out that it was my fault. it was just the software I'd used. It was Apple's Pages that did some weird stuff to the file.
Okay.
And they're like, but I'm really sorry that happened. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to fix this myself. This guy, like the vice president of the company, like took apart my PDF and rebuilt it. And then he's like, I'm going to give you a free copy to look it over, make sure it's okay. And then once you okay it, I'm going to give free copies to every person that ordered it.
Wow.
And then for like 2 years after that, Lulu was like the go-to place for webcomics because everyone's talking about what good customer service they had.
Yeah.
So like I said, everybody was... All the people that went crazy about this were doing it because they're so passionate about how people are able to publish books of their comics online.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can say, hey, this is a good way to publish comics online, these same people that are following the story can be like, hey, this is a good way to make money by publishing comics online. I'm passionate about this now, and let's promote it.
So in other words, maybe a simple way, like a blog title way to say it, is that when someone says you suck, what you should probably be hearing is I give a darn.
Yeah.
You know, although there are just some people out there who are just kooks, right? Yeah. You know, and that happens. That's the price of engaging in the world, is you're going to meet a lot of kooks, and you've met more than your share of kooks. What are your secret circle posts? This is why you should follow Ryan on Google+ if you're not currently. Ask to join the secret circle because you post great stories about the cartoon commune, where there's like... Can we tell the story about
that? Yeah,
okay.
My customers don't listen to the show. I'll complain about them. You name one of the stories, I'll tell it.
So one of the services that you offer, and we're not trying to promote this service specifically, but you know, you'll make a custom comic for somebody, and then for $20 more, you'll send them a print edition.
Yeah.
And this person said, "I just like to order I want a 24-page comic about my friend, and give me a quote." And you said,
"Yeah, So I'm like, yeah, it came out to like $1,000, $2,000, something like that, for the comic, and $20 for the soft cover printed copy. And like, yeah, that's all I need is a soft cover print copy." And I'm like, well, yeah, but okay, I must not have explained myself very well. See, what it is you pay for the artwork, and then the $20 is just a printing fee. And they're like, yeah, that's all I need is the printing. And I'm like, okay, let me break this down more for you. You order something from Amazon, right? You pay like $100 for the thing, and then you pay like $10 to ship it. You can't pay just the $10 for shipping because you didn't buy anything. There's nothing to ship. So you need to buy the thing, and then you pay for the printed copy. She's like, yes, so could you just send me the printed copy? And I'm like, a printed copy of what? And she says, of My Boyfriend is a Superhero. Aren't you listening?
Oh, my God. So you deal with that.
Yeah,
you deal with that when you're... There's no mitigating that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and what I realized there, most of my customers are not people who are into comics.
Right.
They're people whose boyfriends are into comics. They don't know what to get their boyfriend. They don't understand comics at all, but they're like, my boyfriend likes Batman. Do something about that. I don't know. I don't know what to get him for Christmas. So that's what I do, and I have to realize that's who I'm talking to, and I can't get upset that they don't understand what I'm saying. I just have to find ways to explain myself better, and sometimes I can't do that, no matter how hard I try.
And at the very least, and again, we're going round and round and recursively telling the story, is that you have a story to tell now.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's not a pleasant experience to go through, going through an Abbott Costello routine in real life, but it's a funny story to tell after the fact, you know? So, I don't know. Is there any, did we touch on everything about your theory on why we fight? I think it's a pretty rock solid. So what can we expect from you next? I mean, I know you got secret things that...
Oh, I got some secret stuff coming.
You got a doozy.
I've learned in the past year that what I need to do is to not announce things until they're ready. Because I have, like I said, I have a hard drive full of scripts, things I want to work on, and all these business plans and all these projects. and I get really excited about one and then announce it and make a big deal out of it. And then I move to another one and work. And I have all these projects that are different stages of completion, and they all eventually get done. But when I move to another project, it seems to everyone else like a failure.
Yeah.
And then when I finally finish it 8 years later, it's like, here's this thing. They're like, oh, that thing you failed to do 8 years ago, whatever. I already read part of it.
Yeah.
So I got a lot of secret things coming, but when they're done, I'll be like, hey, I made this thing.
Well, I think that one of the things that you're talking about is going to be a big deal when you say very humbly, here's the thing. I'm super excited about it. And I know that that's awful to tease an audience that way, but you know, pay attention to Ryan Estrada on the Twitters and Facebooks and Google Pluses, because some really, really neat stuff is coming. Hmm. I don't know what the time difference is between here and Korea, but we should have you back on the show to talk about it when it happens.
Indeed.
So, but thanks so much for coming out to my place. I mean, I know that, you know, this, it wasn't the whole reason you're in Ann Arbor, yeah. But I'm... Is it bad of me to say that I'm grateful for the opportunity?
Well, another story to tell. So that's the kind of story that I live for. I made out of it for like $100, replacing the screen, and just the visual image of the 17-inch cell phone makes it a funny story.
that's true. Yeah, you know, it's like when the iPad was first being rumored, everybody was like, "Oh, it's just gonna be a big iPhone." Well, that's gonna look stupid holding up a big thing next to your head, and so, you know, and that is a comical image, but you did it for real.
Yeah. Like I'm happy when things like that happen to me. Like if I had just bumped it with my elbow on my desk, I'd be mad. But when I can tell a story that involves me looking like an idiot with a 17-inch computer next to my head, tripping over and launching it and making parents cover their children's ears, that's worth $100.
Yeah. And it also makes me think of like when we were first talking a couple of years ago, and I was telling you about somebody who was giving me a really hard time online, and I was telling you about the experiences that I was going through, and I was trying to like crunch on, how do I deal with this? How do I deal with this person who clearly has a major problem with me? And your response was like, I wish I had guys like that.
Yeah,
in my life.
I'm jealous, man. Send them my way. If that gentleman was listening to the show right now, my email address is ryan@ryanestrada.com. I'm sure I've said some offensive things during the course of the show. You can hit me up.
I think this guy follows my stuff pretty regularly. So, yeah, you maybe get an email from him. Okay. Well, thanks, Ryan. And safe trip back to Korea. Good luck with the laptop. And we'll be watching and eagerly waiting for more stories.
All right.
So ryanestrada.com. What other thing? Places?
Everything's linked to from there. So
okay.
Makes it easy.
Nice, easy to navigate homepage. Okay, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. If you want to help out the show a little bit, a neat thing that you could do would be to go to iTunes and give us a star review. If you think this stuff was interesting and worth listening to, it's as simple as just going to iTunes, looking up Comics Are Great, and hitting the little star button. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say that in order to bring some traffic to the show, do we want to call anybody out and insult anybody and start any...
Pick a fight with somebody? Yeah. Dave.
Black and white comics are not real comics.
All ages comics are for sucks. All comics should be pointed at adults in order to legitimize the art form. And, hey, you know what? I got no problem with wasp-waisted women in all my comics. All women should be idealized in the cartoon art form because it is an ideal world that we're creating with these things. So there you go. Okay. In other words, autobio indie comics are also all for sucks because it's a bunch of navel-gazing pack.
There we go.
comicsaregreat@gmail.com. Thanks, Ryan. So thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. And until next time, I've been Jersey Droz from comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter. Okay, bye.